Well, welcome back, everyone, to a Basic Conversation. And today, Father Basic and I will delve into some of the themes of his lecture that is titled Bridging the Generational Divide. And Father Basic, again, great to be alongside you.
Let's go for it, Brad.
Let's go for it. So this lecture really focused on the unique aspects of how young people, Gen Zers and millennials, and older people, boomers, silent generation, interact with each other. And cultivating relationships with people that aren't of our own age presents some unique challenges, but great opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this, of your lecture, was really to say, how can we enhance, increase, make better the dialogue between the digital natives and those of us.
Oh, well said.
In the
that's exactly what we want to do.
That's
Brad.
Exactly what we want to do, and I always pay attention to how you format your lectures. And you did four vignettes to try to encapsulate all your themes. And the first one was you described a relationship between a grandfather and a 17-year-old grandson and a trip to northern Michigan.
Yeah.
The second one was a conversation between a mother and a 31-year-old son. It's to say, as a descriptor, someone who is a failure to launch, maybe, or a concern about failure to launch.
Yes.
And then the third vignette was the professor, Sherry Turkle, psychologist, MIT professor, author of the book Reclaiming Conversations, and her conversations with some of her students.
Yes, yes.
And then the fourth one, you saved the right bower for the last one. It was Pope Francis talking via Zoom to young people 16 to 29 and talking about the power of youth. So
That's a great summary of the lecture.
It's a great summary.
And it's typical of what I try to do is make statistics and analysis concrete by telling stories and envisioning actual conversations. The one of the grandfather taking his son on a trip is I know the grandfather and things about the trip and so on. So that was
based on a true story, yeah. But and you obviously put pieces in there to kind of amplify the point.
Exactly.
You know, I did throughout the whole lecture, the things that came to mind for me were this idea of when I was younger and maybe the people of the older generation that had an influence on me or people I had a disconnect with. The other thing that rang through all of through the entire lecture was the factor of technology.
Yeah.
And that people of different generations, older and younger generation, have always kind of struggled with some of the, but technology has amplified some of that.
I think that point that this is the first generation of young people who have known something important about life that their elders don't know.
Oh, right.
I think it's, as far as I can tell, it's the first time in history that's ever happened. Always before, the young had to learn from the old. Now you get your five-year-old niece to help you with your cell phone. I mean, and it creates a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I think in part, young people say, well, my priest uncle, he doesn't even know how to do a computer. What does he know about life? You know, what does he know about anything? And I think by the same token, older generations can get a little cowed by this. I have to call my grandson to fix my phone for me or help me with the phone. So it's a new dynamic for sure, and I think it creates a different logic between the two generations. But you're right, the technologies, and it's all focused on that cell phone.
Right.
And so, you know, the Generation Z now is actually the largest cohort now in the United States. Mm-hmm. And you see all the businesses figuring out, well, how do we sell things to these people? Because that's the big market now.
Right.
And, of course, they're all technologically savvy. They've grown up with a phone, first generation that's
right.
known it all the way through. And I think that is just absolutely vital factor.
You know, the first vignette, Father Basic, it was this idea of trying to figure out what you can share in common.
Yeah.
The grandfather was really interested in spending time with his grandson, but the grandfather had spent many years supporting
yeah.
and being a part of this. So it wasn't like, hey, let's just go on a trip.
Yeah.
They had a relationship, but the
yeah.
grandfather also understood that the trip had to have something of some meaning and relevance to his 17-year-old. So
yeah.
he crafted a trip that made sense.
Yeah, he did a little bit of dialogue with the grandson before they left on things he might want to do and figured out things they could do in common. And I think part of his goal, clearly, was to better understand his grandson. And they would have time together, and they'd be in a car, and they couldn't escape one another.
Right.
You know, had to figure out. Somehow it's coming back to my mind, an example I used of a friend of mine who wanted to have the sex talk with his teenage son and took him to a restaurant or to a big boy or someplace, and she's thinking he had him trapped so they could talk. and he starts out the whole thing and said, if you're going to talk about that, I'm leaving. Goodbye. So he couldn't keep him. But I guess you're in a car driving in northern Michigan. The grandson can't really escape
right.
the fact of interaction.
But a car does create the opportunity for a different level of conversation,
yeah.
and especially if it's an extended period of
period.
Well,
I remember
time.
Going on fishing trips with my father up north, and long hours in the car. I treasured them.
Right. Did you do most of the talking, or did you listen the most?
I think it was pretty mutual between my father and me.
Mm.
My father often... He took me seriously, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I could get into a whole lecture on that, but
right.
Yes, he made me feel important, and I treasured his wisdom. I liked to listen to him talk.
Yeah.
I liked to listen to the older generation at the table where we were quiet. If my uncles came in from Pittsburgh and the conversation, you know, kids today don't want to sit there for that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they're still the center of attention. Right?
Right,
young people,
yeah.
And in those days we were quiet, and I loved it. I loved hearing my uncles talk and drink it in. I didn't want to leave the table, and I think that's another dynamic that's changed. I mean, if I'm talking to somebody in the back of church, a parent, and the child comes up, the child gets preference right away.
Yeah.
Very seldom will the mother say, now wait till I'm finished with this conversation and I'll talk to you. That happens very seldom these days.
Mm.
Very different dynamic.
Right. One of the dynamics of that Northern Michigan story with the grandfather and grandson was one of the ways the grandson showed great respect for the grandfather was he never took his phone out. And he took his phone out after the grandfather went to bed.
Yeah, right.
What discipline.
Yes.
And what a great compliment. And that description really presents a challenge for us.
But what you said earlier, let's not miss your earlier point, that the grandfather had created a relationship with his grandson over the years.
Right.
He had driven many miles to go see his class plays or
mm-hmm.
see him play sports or come there, as I said, on Halloween to carve pumpkins. It was a whole long history. You don't just suddenly talk to a teenager when you haven't had any
right.
relationship.
Right.
And that, I mean, that takes us back. We're bridging this gap between the older generations and the younger ones. It's a constant thing. You don't just suddenly turn a switch on.
Right.
And they young people know if you care about them or not, if
yeah.
you're interested in them. And if you do try to listen to them, makes all the difference.
And this idea of trying to understand the person you're sitting across
yeah.
is kind of an underlying aspect
yeah.
to this idea of bridging any type of divide,
yeah.
but especially with generation.
Knowing how to dialogue is so crucial,
yeah.
and dialogue involves listening and respecting the other person and thinking that I have something to learn from the other person.
Right.
It's not just a play acting, but if I actually listen, I might learn something.
Mm-hmm.
So first try to understand before you give big advice on how to live as a teenager.
Yes, that's a good parameter to operate from. The second vignette, Father Basic, I was struck by this idea of, first of all, the line of the whole lecture was when the son, who's been living in the home, 31 years old, and he said, you know, Mom, Jesus was lived at home at the age of 33. That was...
That is an important line. And it is really a striking thing that Jesus was still in his early 30s and at home and not apparently doing anything special.
Right.
He was, the people in Nazareth said, well, who's he? He's the carpenter's son. So I like to play with that idea of Mary saying, well, isn't it about time you got out of here and started doing, you're the Messiah, you're supposed to be doing this great mission, and here you are 32 years old and still at home. Let's get with it.
Right, so thinking of Jesus as a possible failure to launch,
very much
like the anecdote that you were sharing. But you use that effectively to talk about kind of the mindset or some of the concerns of the younger generation.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Getting married later. I think for men, it's all the way up to 30.
Mm-hmm.
I think for women, it's around 28, which I personally think is a good thing.
Sure, yeah.
Having dealt with many people and preparing for marriage and so on.
Yeah.
Especially young women who are out on their own and have made it and have a career and making money and all of that. It seems to me they're always in a better position to make a decision about getting married to somebody or not.
Right.
It's a position of more power, which I think is healthy.
Yeah. And this idea of just a little bit leery or cautious in making long-term commitments.
Yeah, commitment. You see that in the problem of young men deciding to become priests.
Mm.
See it in people putting off marriage. And unfortunately, very often when a decision is made, it has what I call a loophole. I taught in a seminary and young men looking to become priests, and I knew them very well. I was a confidant to many of them, and I knew the decision to get ordained a priest was loopholed in some way.
Mm.
That is, hey, if this doesn't work out, I'll do something else. Now, it was surprising to me and problematic in many ways.
Yeah.
And some of the ones that I liked the most and had the most hope for stayed in the priesthood for a couple of years and left.
Mm-hmm.
So making commitment in our, you know, the great goal today is keep your options open.
Right.
And that becomes almost a moral maxim for many people. Don't get hedged in. Don't get bogged down.
Right. And the desire to get married because of the 50% failure rate.
Yeah.
That also creates this idea of let's really think this through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many of them in their late 20s have friends already who have been married 3 years and are divorced.
Right. So those first two anecdotes were kind of encapsulations and summative in a lot of ways. And then you went to an actual professor.
Yeah.
Dr. Turkel, and I haven't read her book, Reclaiming Conversation. What a great title.
It is a fantastic title. She's still alive, by the way, and still functioning and highly respected in her field. I think I've been trying to figure out if some of her studies are still holding up. I know that one of them that struck me that was so important was that she thought or saw that young people who lived with the phone, grew up with the phone, had less empathy than other people. And she also made the claim that if you got them away from their phone for a period of time, that they would grow in empathy. Well, I've seen some studies after that who suggest that the decline in empathy has been going on for quite a while.
Mm.
And there might be other factors besides the phone,
right,
besides living with social media.
What would those be? What are those other factors?
Yeah, I mean, the studies that I've been looking at lately are not specifying that. Mm-hmm. It would be a general trend away from social consciousness.
It's all about me.
A fundamental, let's put it this way, a fundamental individualism.
Sure.
I have to look out for number one. I have to pull my own strings.
Less concern about the greater good.
Yeah. That's, okay. I think, and I think that would be an overarching theme in which Sherry Turkle's work would make sense to me. A rising individualism that says that I have to pull my own strings and
right.
do my own thing, and with a reduced sense of responsibility for the larger culture, for other people, and
right.
so on.
And how you frame this was a conversation that, again, she was entering into a dialogue with 10 of her students, and she basically said, tell us about the impact and role of social media and your cell phone.
Yeah.
And some of the things they shared resonated, obviously, for all of us that have worked with young people or have children. But this idea that they stay connected with all their friends, people. And you know what really how that is manifest is, you know, when I was able to get my license at 16, when I hit 16, I wanted that license because the car meant I could go see my friends.
Exactly.
But nowadays, kids aren't in a rush to do that because they're already connected.
It's hard for a lot of us to believe they're not rushing to get a license
they're
and
not.
Drive their car at 16. It's hard for us to imagine.
Yes, because they're already connected.
Right.
And so that's a
But then there's always the question of the quality of that connection,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
They can be connected with anybody anytime they want, and they are. But I always use that example that there was a student at UT, one of my students, who was rude to a staff member, and I called him out on it. And I said, you have to apologize for that, and you have to straighten that out. And so I found out what he did. He sent a text message.
My bad.
He sent a text message. And when I first heard it, I said, you did what? You didn't go see her and say anything? No. And then what I found out, very common, the young people, texting is great because you can check it out. You can look it over before you actually send it and see if you made a mistake. It's sort of failure-proof sort of thing. Whereas conversation, as Sherry Turkle wants us, reclaim conversation, is a give and take. And I want to look at what your face is telling me as I'm talking to you. And I might make a mistake, but then I know it from your reaction. I should never have said that. Sorry. Let's talk about it. And it makes it so much more personal. So I guess what would the guy who texted the apology, it's a depersonalization.
Yeah.
You know, it's taking us away from what human encounter that means so much to us.
And sometimes those hard conversations, they have to be had in person.
Yeah.
Just have to.
Yeah. We get used to it because we get cues, right? And we make mistakes and so on. But that's all part of it. But so part of what I have to do, I think, is what I tried to stress with young people when I was working with them is, you know, gut it out.
Hmm.
Be a man. Go talk to her. Live up to your ideals, you know, have some courage.
Mm.
It's that sort of admonition, I think, that the young people need today.
Yeah. The other thing that the students provided feedback with is that, of course, it's information, but then it's also a companion, and also they're never bored.
Yeah.
Right? There's just like you can get movies, anything.
Yeah.
But you're never bored. But that creates problems on the other end.
I think it does, yeah. Living with a certain amount of boredom is sort of healthy, you know. It's life. It's the way it is. And I think, finally, the social media end up being deficient in emotional responses to things. I mean, I don't think that... talking to texting people back and forth all the time. One of the things I remember from my students saying, the reason they often were texting because they wanted to know what they were missing. You know, the girl's out with this guy on a date and she goes to the ladies' room and checks out where the other party is going on.
Right.
You know, it's a distraction in that way.
Right. Speaking of distractions, one of the things that Turkle in her research said, that the phone can impede relationship building in the conversation. And you brought up the point that just having the phone on the table changes things.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, not surprising, but I've seen it happen. Yeah, that it makes a difference. If you're having dinner and trying to have a family dinner and so on, and everyone leaves their cell phone in their room and they're at the table without them, it's one thing. But if one of them brings the phone and puts it on the table, Sherry Turkle says that changes the conversation. Yeah. And I think that's true.
And it changes it in this way. In my opinion, if we're having a conversation and you put your phone out, I won't go in as in depth, because that nonverbal is something's probably going to come up and I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to invest in this conversation if you're going to.
Right.
So it's very nuanced, but not really nuanced.
Yeah.
And I think in the for those of us working who want to be really responsive to people we serve, there's some rationalization like that. I want to be quick to get back to the client, so it gives kind of an out to have this. And I can still be like, hey, I have to get this, but it still impedes. So. Mm-hmm. Somehow this idea of instant culture and technology, the power of that, and also preserving the human dynamics of between each other. We have some work to do on that.
Yeah, for sure. Are we saving time for the Pope?
We are doing, yes, absolutely. That was the fourth one, right?
Yeah.
And so that's also a technology theme, right? The Pope, most people, an audience with the Pope would be impossible, but not now, right? And that's how you framed it, that he had a worldwide audience with 16 to 29-year-olds.
Yeah.
And he talked about just the power of youth. And he, obviously, I'm not sure when that took place, but he's in his 80s, right?
Yeah.
And talking to some people, 60, 50.
Yeah, he's remarkable in trying to dialogue with people.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just absolutely remarkable. You know, one of the things that struck me the most about his thing was that youth is not just a time of preparation for something. Right. It is something. You know, it is a time to do good.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just, well, as soon as I get out of college, I'm going to help people out or something, or I'm going to make something myself, but make youth an opportunity itself. The Pope is so great on that. Seize the moment. If you're old, don't just wait for death. Do something good yet while you're old. And the same way with every generation and the young people. So he wants them. And then the other good thing is he knows they have to figure out what it is.
Hmm.
No, none of us, you and I, are not going to tell young people how to figure out how to manage the phone. They're going to figure it out, right?
Right.
I mean, what we want to do, what we could do and supply is a sense that, well, however you figure this out, you should be serving the common good, or you should be loving your neighbor. You know, or you should be trying to spread God's kingdom in the world, but you have to figure out what to do with it. You know, young families just starting, they have to figure out how they're going to manage the phone. When are the kids going to get a phone?
Right.
And how are they going to circumscribe that in any ways? So the Pope is so great on that to me. Live in the moment, you know, and you find your own way, and it won't be the way of your parents. And as a parent, you know, you have to let them go, right?
Right.
They have to find their own way. And the Pope affirms that. I think the young people who appreciate the Pope know that he is somehow for them, that he's somehow on their side, that he recognizes their talents and gifts. That's a wonderful thing. Be your own person, he says, you know. Make your contribution while you're young. Don't wait.
Don't wait. You're not
do
just preparing.
Now.
Do it now.
Yeah,
right?
We're not always preparing for something, so we're living in the time, real time.
One of the things that the Pope, and I think you framed it maybe putting together a couple of his thoughts, this idea of the importance of discernment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his favorite thing. He's a Jesuit. The Jesuits are very big on discernment. Comes from the St. Ignatius, spiritual exercises, who wants us to put ourselves in a prayerful position and sort of imagine Christ talking to us or imagining what Christ is saying to us. And it's a very different thing than a calculus of saying, well, am I going to marry this girl or not? Well, she's got 3 positive points and 2 negatives. Maybe the positive, I'll marry her. Yeah. You know, what the Pope wants us to do is to be in a prayerful state, be open to the promptings of the Spirit, you know, think that God is with me in the process, and see which of my options makes sense. He thinks, my mentor, Karl Rahner, says, it's a great way to make decisions in life. You know, you can make your pluses and minuses. Should I take this new job or not? Okay. But he wants us to imagine taking it, the new job that you're offered, and what will it be like? You know, and he thinks that sooner or later, if you're really prayerful and if you're really attuned to God and listening to the Spirit, one of the options will become clear to you. Right. I personally like to make decisions that way. If I have a luxury of time, I let it play in my mind. I just let it go. I don't need to decide it now. I'll decide it next week. And in between, things happen, you know. And a lot of times for me, I'll say, well, now it's clear.
Yeah,
I got to act. I got to confront her. This is it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed or thought it was very thought-provoking. You used a couple phrases, this idea of discernment, where it's, and it's for young people, it's good for all of us. What's your purpose? What are you passionate about? Who can you serve? How do you want to make the world better? Those are giant thematic that forces some reflection.
What am I good at, and what does the world need?
Yeah. And who can I serve? That puts it right back in a Christian perspective,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, discernment in the Christian perspective is a matter of how do I love God and love my neighbor?
Yeah.
How do I build up the body of Christ? How do I spread the kingdom of justice and peace and love in the world? Mm. Yeah.
Well, let's finish with this. You mentioned your father and those trips, and obviously he was someone of the older generation that had an impact on you. Was there others that fed you in a similar way?
Well, my mother.
Your mother, yes, too, yes.
Yeah, my mother.
Yes,
my mother's great virtue was acceptance. She had hard things to accept in her own life, and she did it with grace. And so she became my great model. So when my mentor, my great teacher, Karl Rahner, says self-acceptance is the key to the spiritual life, but oh, how hard that is to do, I got my mother in my head. And how she gave birth to a child who was totally non-functional, and she had to know what to do about that. And my mother decided that she wouldn't be mad at God, and she wouldn't feel guilty, but she would raise that child, care for that child, a totally challenged child. And so that was acceptance in my mind that was resonated with me and was very real.
That's great. Well, I think that's a great stopping point here, the impact you just shared about your mom and dad.
Yeah, but I got many more things I wanted to say, Brad.
Else do you have?
No, go for it. It's time. That's good.
And we will say that we both of us turned our phones off, so we had no interruptions.
True.
Thank you to Chris, our great coach here at WGTE.
Yeah.
He frequently reminds us that, and because we might not have. We might have walked right in here, this conversation, phones would have went off or something.
If my phone went off in the middle of the conversation, it would have messed up the whole thing.
It would have
been
not in line with what we're talking about.
Right.
So, once again, thank you, JB. Real enjoyable.
Thanks, Brad. Good work.